עצמאות, עצמי, myself, my reliance on myself, I'm self-sufficient maybe, I could survive alone, I'm completely able to support myself. And the state of Israel is, and God willing, always will be, a strong and sovereign state. But one of the things that makes Israel truly unique, what distinguishes it from any other country, can only be expressed in the Hebrew. It's like the word shalom. It means hello, it means goodbye, it means peace, it means completion. And the same thing is true for the word atzma'ut. At its core, we might think that atzma'ut could be defined as strength, like in Devarim chapter 8, where God is going to take us to the land and he warns us and he says, make sure that you don't get to the point where you say, kochi ve'otzem, that word atzma'ut, otzem yadi, the strength of my hands. Make sure that you don't think that by your own abilities, by your own strengths, that you've achieved all this success. And it says, Vezacharta, the next verse says, make sure you remember that Hashem, your God, he's the one who gives you strength to accomplish everything. So it's a beautiful idea that otzem or atzma'ut or strength, the day that commemorates the fact that we have our own land of Israel, has within it embedded this idea that yes, you have the best minds and the best military, but don't forget for one minute that your strength actually comes from God. So it could be Yom HaAtzma'ut, a day to be mindful of this gift of this homeland that we have. But Atzma'ut means way more than that. Another idea for Atzma'ut could possibly be from the word Etzim, the essence. Like in Torah, an auspicious day will be described as having, they'll say, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. For instance, the day that Noah boarded his ark, or the day that Abraham performed his Brit Milah, or the day that God took us out of Egypt, Pesach, Shavuot, Yom Kippur. All of these days are described as having a special etzem. So it's also very beautiful to think that when the day was named Yom HaAtzma'ut, we're recognizing that this day that we were restored to our land, its essence is as monumentous. It's part of the continuum of all our biblically, historically significant days. And so far, we started to put together this idea that Yom HaAtzma'ut is a day of strength. It's a day that has a substantial essence. But I think that the strongest description would come from relating the word Atzma'ut to Atzamot, to bones. And possibly the most famous bones in Torah are those of Yosef. At the end of his life, Yosef asks his brothers to swear that they'll take his bones with them when they are redeemed. Let's remember that it was because of Yosef that they came down to Egypt in the first place. So on the simplest level, we could see how the brothers returning Yosef's bones to Israel and specifically burying him in Shechem, that was where they had kidnapped him from in the first place, that might be a beautiful tikkun, a restoration, for having sold him in the first place. But I'm not so comfortable suggesting that the day for our holiday, our celebratory day that we became a autonomous state, I don't know how comfortable I feel suggesting that this national holiday is commemorating the return of Joseph's bones to the land. I think there's much more than that. So if we look at the verses where Yosef makes this request, we start to see a deeper significance. Yosef says, I'm about to die, but God is going to take you out of this place to the land that he promised to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And then he says, my favorite words in the entire world, Pakod Yivkod Elohim Etchem, Veha'alitem Et Atzmotai Mizeh. The redemption that Yosef is describing, he tells them in Egypt, even before he dies, that God is going to take them out of the land and they will be restored to the land of promise. Yes. That promise is tied together with these words, Pakod Yivkod. Those of you who know me know that they're my favorite words, because Pakod, that word itself, means to remember. That's what the English will tell you. God will remember us, will surely remember us. It's written twice, Pakod Yivkod. But we know, because we're so proficient in text, we know that that word was created when Sarah first had her baby, right? Hashem Pakadet Sarah. And we know that that word means way more than just remembering. We know it means, if Shani's with us, she would be saying it. Shani Burko likes to repeat this phrase all the time. We know that the word Pakod Yivkod means that God is able to render the impossible possible. Whatever is taking place in the natural world, the natural order can be suspended by God. The unimaginable could be literally conceivable with these words, Pakod Yivkod. And so what Yosef is saying at the end of his life is that this redemption is going to be something incredible. It's not going to be something that's just going to follow a certain course of nature. The redemption is going to require a tremendous level of the miraculous. And the level of miraculous, this Pakod Yivkod, is going to be tied up together with my bones. So we, of course, have to ask ourselves, what on earth do Yosef's bones have to do with the miraculous redemption? And it wasn't just the redemption then when God took us in the land. If you study the history of the establishment of our state, every step of the way was one miracle after the next. So our question is, first of all, what do Yosef's bones, atzamot, have to do with our atzmaut, with our day? And again, I just want to make sure I'm clear. I don't want to call it a day of independence. This is not a Jewish 4th of July. It is something that, as Yosef has now told us, it is something that's going to have to combine not just with Yosef's bones, atzamot, but with Yosef's essence, with Yosef's etzem. All of these words, and that's why I'm saying, like the word shalom, they are so multi-layered, they are so multi-dimensional, that it's impossible to just say one word and capture the entire thing. So let's talk about Yosef for a minute, and let's remember what it was. We need to mute, thanks. And let's remember what it is about Yosef, what his essence was, that's going to allow for us to be able to once again, and I know we have some people even on this Zoom who've already merited to be living in the land, and I'm so happy and I'm so proud for you, but until our entire nation is united in sovereignty and in peace in the land, Yosef still has a message today to deliver us. He's saying, you need to take my etzem. It's my etzem that's going to get you there whole as a united people. And so the first thing that we know about Yosef is he is a person that goes through crazy trauma. From the beginning, he loses his mother when he's still a child. And then his brothers hate him. And then I could go through his whole story. But basically, they sell him. He's a slave. He ends up in Potiphar's house. He gets falsely accused. He ends up in jail. One thing after the next. But the thing about Yosef, the essence, the etzem of Yosef, is that he's able to face difficult situations. And every single time he's in any one of those difficult situations, he invokes the name of God. Whether he's being seduced by Potiphar's wife, he says, Elohim, I can't do this. This is not something that I can do and still face my Elohim. Or if he's going to be in a jail and interpreting dreams for a butler and baker, he brings and invokes that Elohim has Pitronim. Every time the name of God, it's a beautiful quality that a lot of our parents and grandparents always say, you know, God be with you, God protect you. It's part of his vernacular, it's part of his language, it's part of, that is one of the features of his essence. Another feature of his essence is that he connects, he stays, no matter how disconnected he becomes from his entire family, and no matter how apart he is physically from his family, he stays connected to his family and community, literally. He knows the value of preserving our Jewish identity. Whether he's in Potiphar's house or he's in the jail, he never hides, and it's to his credit, he never hides the fact that he's a Jew. It's not something he's ashamed of. If anything, he's constantly called the Ivri. And it's interesting to note that when he is living in Egypt and he's already the viceroy, he's wearing the robes and the necklace, and he has all of the, he's totally established in that regard. The Torah makes a point to say that the Egyptians won't eat with him because he's a Jew, which means that he never ever makes compromises and never tries to hide who he is. Even when he names his sons Ephraim, Menashe, he doesn't just have connections to his family and community. He connects those all the way back to the land of Israel. So his essence, an essence that connects to family and to Israel, is what Yosef is saying. Take my atzmot with you. You're not just going to be able to get into the land because you're being transported there. In order to get there, there has to be some type of an emotional movement that's going to take you there as well. Yosef's third sense of essence, and this may seem a little bit unusual, but I believe his third etzem, his third essence, is having the ability to cry. I can't think of a Torah personality that cries more than Yosef. And crying says a lot. You know, when we cry, we realize that we're not in complete control. And when we cry, we remove the barriers that protect and preserve our inner reality. You know, for the most part, we live our lives, we may not realize it, but we live our lives in a state of perpetual restraint. We hold back, you know, get it together, be a tough guy, you know, hold it in, never let him see you sweat. The times that we're living in, we're so forced with social media and everything, we're always so forced to have this restraint where if our insides come out, it'll make us vulnerable. And that's what Yosef does most of the time. Most of the time, he does hold back. And he goes and he leaves the room and he cries privately. He he puts up this curtain. He's wearing a mask. He can't allow for people to see his true inner self. He's the viceroy of Egypt, for goodness sakes. But in the last attempt to connect with his brothers, he does cry in his presence. And he asks them to have his bones accompany them. And maybe that was his swan song. He was saying, don't just take my bones, take me, take my essence, take my experience, take my life journey, learn from it. Because if you learn from it, you'll start to pave the road back to Eretz Yisrael. And Yosef, by doing this, he doesn't just connect with his brothers on an emotional level, but when he takes his truest self, so to speak, and he connects to God, and he connects to man, and then he connects literally inward to himself, he's saying that these emotions, being able to stretch yourself horizontally to each other, brothers, and you're able to connect with God vertically, and you're able to make this inward movement and literally allow people and get in touch with your feelings and let them see you cry and be vulnerable. When all of this is possible, when you could become that person, Yosef is saying, that is when you will activate the Pakod Yivkod. That's what's going to make God take the natural world and say, if man is behaving in this type of way, then I, says God, I am going to break the laws of the natural and I am going to really come to the aid of my nation. And the establishment of Israel, I can't say it enough times, if it's anything, it's God unleashing his Pakod abilities. He's telling us clearly, I have the ability to do this. And so there's a very beautiful prophecy in the book of Yechezkel, I think it's chapter 37. And in this prophecy, it's a famous prophecy, it's the vision of the dry bones. So at first, God tells the prophet, he calls him Ben Adam. In other words, it wants us to remember and take us all the way back to the days of Adam, to the days when God created man from dust. It's a trip that God takes, and we don't know if this story is metaphoric or whether it really happened, but regardless, the prophet is shown all of these anonymous bones, and they're strewn about in a valley. And these bones have no identity, they're dispersed. Many people like to study this chapter during the Holocaust. It's a remembrance of the, bones that had been unfortunately just, thrown into graves without names, without identities, without the proper kavod. And God takes Yechezkel and he takes him to this valley. And in this valley are all of these bones. And the scene is pretty grim and hopeless. But by the end of the prophecy, and God tells Yechezkel, I want you to tell the bones that they are going to come to life. And I want you to make them aware. And of course, as the prophet is speaking to the bones, the intent is that the reader internalizes that God has the ability of taking strewn about dry bones, and he could add sinews, and he could add flesh to them, and he could breathe fresh life into them so that they could be reborn. And this allegory is here, and I am bringing it first and foremost because it speaks to atzmot and atzmaut and bones, but I really didn't want to bring it as something that would be sad or even gory, I want to say that God is telling us that He has the ability to enact this resurrection. And it doesn't just talk about Techiyat HaMetim, which many scholars use this as proof that there will be life after death. But I think this metaphor is for us, for the living, for the ones that sometimes feel disconnected. We ourselves sometimes feel like we're not connected, like those dry bones. And sometimes we feel that our otzem, our strength, otzem yadi, you know, sometimes we feel like we're on top of the world, but sometimes we don't have as much otzem, as much strength, and we feel that our strength is weak. Or we feel that our etzem, our identity, our essence is in crisis. And it's at this point specifically that God says, just as I can collect and reassemble strewn about bones and breathe life into those bones, I can restore you to vibrancy. How about I promise, this is Yom Ha'atzma'ut, it's a promise. I promise to restore you on your land. And it's so beautiful because the prophet says, God, the people are saying, Avda tikvateinu, our hope is lost. And today, I hope we could sing with all our might. When we sing Hatikva, and we say, Od lo avda tikvateinu. No way. We are not those dried up bones. We are the bones that God has breathed life into, that God has reconnected us to ourselves and to each other. And we say this and we sing it because it's our belief that, and it's our greatest hope that God continues to do this. But the most beautiful part, I believe, is the second part of the prophecy. The second part of the prophecy, it's in the same chapter. God tells Yechezkel, and it's beautiful because sometimes they call him the prophet of the third temple. So sometimes he has prophecies about the destruction and some are about the redemption. And then this concept of the third temple, I believe that that's the era that we would consider ourselves in now, meaning that this is going to be hopefully our return to the land in peace, united, everybody's included. And so what God asks Yechezkel to do is to take two sticks and place them in one hand. Each stick is going to have carvings on it. The first stick is going to say for Yehuda and his group and his company, for all of those who are, maybe I should stop a minute and say, at this point in our history, the 12 tribes were already separate, meaning that Ephraim, one of the tribes, the son of Yosef, who's supposed to have the etzem, who's supposed to have the essence of being together with his brothers, ironically, his son Ephraim goes north. And have you ever heard of the 10 lost tribes? Those tribes, that king, the king Yerav'am, who comes from Ephraim, ends up leading a lot of the tribes, at least 10 of them, to the north, and from there they end up, unfortunately, we call them the lost tribes, not because we can't find them, but because they've lost their way, their identity, their religion, their affiliation. I don't want to have to say this, but today in our day, there are so many Jewish people who have also lost their affiliation with Judaism. And this prophecy, I believe, speaks so strongly to that. So God instructs Yechezkel to take these two pieces of wood that he's going to carve on and that he's going to inscribe. And one says for Yehuda. So Yehuda were, that was the group that stayed in Jerusalem, maybe with the Leviim and Kohanim. So we could say Yehuda and Levi basically stayed in Jerusalem. And the other 10 tribes with Yeravam ended up going north with Ephraim. So one stick says for Yehuda and his group, and the other stick says for Ephraim and his people. And then in this prophecy, which is the same chapter that talks about the bones all coming together and being resurrected, God says, hold both of those sticks in your hand, Yechezkel, and I am going to perform a miracle. As you're holding those two sticks in front of the eyes of the people where they could see that the sticks represent the two different factions that the tribes had become, when you're holding these sticks in your hand, I'm going to make a miracle, says God, that these sticks will fuse together. And so this prophecy for sure says, yes, God can and will gather us up. And this is a prayer for Yom HaAtzma'ut, the day of these atzamot, of the bones. The prayer is that God's going to gather every single Jewish soul. Every single soul must be represented in our collective body. Every soul is similar to a bone. The bones in our body, they're all different shapes. They're all different sizes. They all perform different functions. You know that song, Them Bones, right? The foot bones connected to the leg bone, and the leg bones connected to the knee bone, and the knee bones connected to the thigh bone, and it keeps on going. But just like the song starts at the foot bone and ends with the neck bone connected to the head bone, the depiction of the bones are sort of as if they're rising from the bottom up. And when every bone is properly joined, we, like the bones, we go from a horizontal state to a vertical state. I see my friend Katie, so I'm going to repeat a beautiful story that I think perfectly depicts the secret of how all of these unaffiliated bones can really be united. How does it happen? Yes, in Yechezkel's prophecy, God makes it happen. But how are we going to make it happen today in our day? How are we going to take bones and literally have them connect one to another until they are vertical and breathing? I'm talking about our nation. How are we going to bring ourselves back together? So Katie once sent me a recording of Rabbi Wagensberg. He's a rabbi that taught or still teaches in the Old City. And he used the most beautiful illustration, which was the rainbow. And he said so beautifully, he said, I'm going to say bones. He used colors of the rainbow. What is it that keeps all the colors one on top of the other? What keeps them together? What makes them a rainbow? He said, it's not the fact that each one imposed its color on the other or was willing to be next to each other or they tolerated each other. He used the word and he said dependence. Each color was dependent on the other color. Every bone in our body is dependent on the other bone. As a nation, we're all dependent on each other. And with this attitude, I believe that we could bring a sense of harmony. And like a rainbow, we could at once touch the earth and the heaven at the same time. And Mr. Stanley Chira, Alav HaShalom, was a man who lived an extraordinary life. Like Yosef, he had firm belief that Hashem guided his path. And like Yosef, he had a strong sense of love and generosity towards family and community. And when he combined his success in the business world with supportive religious institutions, he had his feet on the ground and his head in the sky. And in my humble opinion, he was a human rainbow.